This is the Wealthability Show with Tom Wheelwright. Way more money, way less taxes.
There have been a lot of threats to capitalism over the last 5 to 10 years. We've seen it in tax the rich. We've seen it in kind of a little bit of a drift towards socialism and even in some cases communism around the world, populism. And the real question is there something actually even bigger than those, than that drift? And today we're going to discover how a massive wealth transfer that's coming up, that's undeniable, could actually shake the foundations of capitalism and have caused permanent changes to how capitalism works, or at least long-term changes to how capitalism works. And we have with us Ken Costa, who is a very experienced and successful investment banker from South Africa. And Ken, if you would, just give us a little bit about your background and why you started talking about this topic.
Well, I grew up in South Africa, but I've been an investment banker in London for the last 40 years. And so I've chaired UBS's investment bank and Lazard International. And what I've noticed is that over this period of time, that there is this extraordinary seismic event that is going to occur, which is that $100 trillion will transfer between one generation, our boomer generation, to the zoomer generation. And the more I started studying this and the more I started mixing and meeting with young entrepreneurs and people in what I call the zennial age between the millennials and Gen Z, I began to detect what could be a serious threat to capitalism and to the society in which we're living. It's a much broader picture because of a number of factors that I'm happy to talk further about.
That's awesome. So, Ken, your book is The $100 Trillion Wealth Transfer, and it's about the handover from boomers to, and what I hear is Gen Z and millennials. It's both of those, I know, will revolutionize capitalism. My kids, I'm a boomer. My kids are millennials. And if I had kids later into life, I would have some Gen Z. Okay. So there's this interesting demographic and there's some commonality. If you will, you're saying it's $100 trillion. $100 trillion over what period of time? Because I think it's a fairly short period of time, isn't it?
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, what we have to say, get ready, Wells Fargo, wake up, JP Morgan, wake up, Bank of America, because there's an even bigger bank, and it's called BOMAD, the Bank of BOMAC, the Bank of Mom and Dad. And the Bank of Mom and Dad is already, already helping out the next generation. You, like me, like every boomer, on deposits for houses, on helping to pay rent, because rent is ridiculously high in practically every city in the world, not just in one country, helping to pay college fees, whichever it is. So it's already started. But what is going to happen is that it's going to increase over the next decade, the next 15 years. It's the estimate that in the US alone, it will be of the order of $83 trillion that will move within the next 2 decades. So it's an enormous amount of money. But you may well say, Tom, look, Ken, come on. One generation dies, another generation takes over. It's happened throughout history. But the difference is this. Firstly, there's never been such a sizable amount of money moved. It's the largest ever. This next generation is going to be the richest ever in terms of the wealth that is transferred. But secondly, they are very tech savvy. And therefore, technology has enabled the generation to be able to work very constructively with new technology, artificial intelligence, coming quantum computing, whatever it is. So that's an empowering tool. So what has happened is we've had wealth transferring, and we will transfer with it in technology, in influence. Just think of social media influence that the generation has over all the social media. And then thirdly, they have a very clear agenda as to what they want to pursue.
Yeah, you know, so let's talk about
environment,
that a little bit.
Justice, equality, and all the rest. So you've got this combination of wealth and power transferring.
Yeah, let's kind of break those down a little bit, because I think there's several things. The technology is a really interesting one. You know, I'm a boomer. I can barely use Zoom, right? So, and yet these kids, they grow up and it's like their brain is wired completely different. So technology is one of those. But you mentioned that they have different priorities. One of the things you're talking about is it's not just that, and it's not that they can't make as much money as boomers can in ways. They've got tools that they can make a lot more and a lot faster. But you talk a lot about their priorities. How do you see, and it's interesting you combine millennial and Gen Z, because I see them a little differently. But how do you see, what's that commonality in motivation that you see as particularly different from boomers and how they're going to use their money?
In a short word, they want to do well, but they also want to do good. And the balance of well and good is shifted towards good. Whereas we would be profit and purpose, they right. would be purpose. And if you can make a profit, you should that should be sufficient. That's the first. I think the second piece is that they're collectively looking to the planet, to the environment, that we have, to justice and equality. And the problem for us is that they would look to us, our generation, and say, you had a fantastic time. You had a period of low interest rates, assets have accumulated at a faster rate, and we have not been a beneficiary of that. You know, we can hardly buy our own houses. They are so expensive. We have to live further and further. We have to travel further, etc. And so there is built up a very serious clash of generations. And that is the piece that we have to address very seriously, because the cohorts that are building on both sides, but in creating caricatures of what boomers are, you know, we're sort of analog people who sort of don't know how to turn on our Zooms and have lived off the fat of the land. And we look at the other side and we say these are feckless avocado eaters on their smashed avocados at that. And the only crisis is when the battery in the device runs out. Now, both of these are caricatures, but they are intense and they are growing. And that's what we have to address, the clash of generations.
Okay, so we see different motivations, but we've had wealth transfers before. We clearly, from generation to generation, that's not that uncommon. I mean, it's going to happen. That's what happens. Why is this one, how do you think this affects capitalism per se? Because that's really the key, the crux of your book, is that it actually revolutionizes capitalism. In what way, when you talk about revolutionizing capitalism, what do you mean by that?
It means the loss of trust and faith in the market economy, in the capitalist system. And what we will see is we have to guard against that the baby of values, which is what they want to have, these good values, which they think are of such a priority, is not thrown out with the bathwater of value. At the end of the day, we have to insist that there is going to be what I call socially energized capitalism. To recognize this, that there is a generation that wants to be socially committed and convinced of communities and the way in which it would work. It's also highly energetic. It's a very energized generation who are creative, startups, you know, venture capital, all of that. But at the end of the day, we have to persuade the generation that it's still capitalism. In other words, there is risk, there is return, there is evaluation, there is measurement, there is performance. And then you can't just forget this. And this is the big issue, is the degree to which we are going to be engaged very actively in the debate to ensure that it doesn't drift into some soft socialist, let's do good attitude that I fear most. So I think in a nutshell, it is that the hindsight of our generation needs to be coupled with the insight of theirs, the younger generation, to create that foresight, that purposeful way forward for capitalism.
So here's the challenge I see. So if you look at a typical business, first generation starts the business, second generation expands the business, third generation spends it into oblivion. or somehow they take off. But those are the two options. It's rarely that the third generation behaves like the second generation. And if you look at, you know, our parents were greatest generation. They're World War II, okay? They're the first generation. A lot of them started their businesses. We're second generation, and now we've got the third generation coming, the millennials and the Gen Zs. That's really the third generation of that business and that economy. And so to me, it's a natural cycle. How do you, you know, you talk about we have to inform, we have to, you know, how do we keep them, the third generation, from basically just trashing the whole thing when you're seeing so much? I mean, for example, in the US, we have this whole tax the rich thing, right? This, we have a serious people in our Congress who talk about true communism.
Well, and don't worry.
So I mean, and some of those are baby boomers, you know, like Bernie Sanders. So how do you combat that?
We've got it here too. So we're on the same page. What I'd want to just clarify one thing. In what you've described, the G3s are different from the normal, you know, find it, keep it, lose it, right. Because of technology has enabled them to do startups that have created businesses that are unimaginably valuable, that have, you know, sort of unicorns are growing from these little acorns. So in a sense, what technology has done is also created a new empowerment to them. But to your direct question, which is a difficult question, we have to be able to take the intellectual argument and fight the ground. What I say to boomers is, for goodness sake, get into with the Zennials, help them in their startups, co-invest with them, coach them, as I've done with a number of startups. If you coach them, but also correct them. We have to be perfectly clear that it's both commending them for what they're doing, but also correcting them when we have seen, in our generation, we know what inflation is. We know what a recession is, a real recession, not a sort of nice fluffy one that there is. You know what it's like when crises occur. A new generation is pretty well, you know, used to sort of Goldilocks, you know, sort of not too hot, not too cold, just being quite nice economics. And that's where we have to find, real active engagement on the ground, respecting them for what their contribution is, but also standing our ground and not conceding the fact that actually there's something particularly horrible about capitalism and it's exploitative and competitive and all of that. It is the best way of stewarding natural and scarce resource.
Right. I heard once a definition of capitalism is it's the worst system we've ever had, except for every other system we've ever had. So
exactly.
Right. I mean, so the yes, are there bad things about capitalism, but we haven't found a better system. And we tried communism, we tried socialism, and none of them have ever worked. And so capitalism has. So what do you think happens if, let's say, we just say it's yours, we're done, wash our hands? What do you think the end result is?
Well, I think the end result is bigger government, increased taxation, lower returns, higher unemployment, because efficiency will immediately suffer. And therefore, there is a school of thought, particularly among some of the young people, of saying, well, we should be taxed more. We should have bigger government. And until you understand the way in which the efficient resources are allocated, I remember the story that set off the book in the first place is that the Occupy movement from Wall Street came to London and wanted to occupy the Stock Exchange, which is next to St. Paul's Cathedral. And about 500 people camped outside St. Paul's Cathedral. And we really thought there could be a violent encounter. And I was asked by the Bishop of London to intervene with them, with the city fathers, to try and reach an accommodation, get them to move off without any violence. But I'll never forget, this one guy said to me, well, Ken, if your system of capitalism is so good and so efficient, how come it's not reaching or distributing to our generation? We can't find a house, you know, we can't pay the rent. And I think that we have to recognize that there is an impairment, right. And we have done very well. out of the growth over the period of time of the asset inflation that we have done. Now, my answer to that is we are sharing that with them, and therefore they are going to be able to do what they want to do with that, but to do it in that sort of responsible way that they think is appropriate for their generation.
No, but you make a good point that asset inflation has been way more than commodity inflation, and it has driven people out of just renting. I was reading an article recently that said that somebody making minimum wage, working 45 hours a week, in many locations, they would spend 100% of their income on rent if they were renting a median level apartment. And that's just, to me, it's like, we would never have thought of that. I mean, you know, my first house was $60,000. And yes, I had a 16% interest rate. But because I had a $60,000 house, I could do the 16% interest rate, right? These days, interest rates go from 2.5 to 5, and people are dying. But part of that is because of the asset inflation. So how do you, to me, that's a natural effect. How do you account for that? And how do you think the next generation will deal with that?
Well, it's a political issue as much as a financial one. If you take the UK, which is different from the US, but I'm sure there are similar places there, unless we are able to be building affordable housing for a generation, we will not, because you can't have a capitalist if there's no capital. And we know that if you've got capital, you look after it, you want to increase it. But if somebody is just going to constantly give you handouts, it's never going to work. So there's a balance that's going to be sorted between affordability and availability. And that's the balance that we must get right if we're going to ensure that that next generation doesn't threaten the whole premise of capitalism, which is that, you know, it may be socially energized capitalism, but it is still capitalism. It is still a market economy. It is still driven by people who want to achieve, to have an aspiration, pay fair taxes rather than crazy taxes.
So as entrepreneurs, we're either in this generation or we've got Gen Xers, that are close to this generation. What do we do? How do we actually work with, because I look at, so I run several businesses. Two of my businesses, my partners are millennials. That's who they are. My business partner running it. And then the other one's the Gen Xer. But my business partners are millennials. And how do you coexist? How do you make that work?
Well, I think that goes to the nub of the matter. So my answer to the whole, clash of the generations is the cooperation of the generations. And that's in two words. It's called co. We know about co-working, co-investing, co-living. But what we haven't done yet is actually created a philosophical base of what I call co-destiny, the way in which the two generations will work together and to cooperate with each other, such that I give you a practical example, and you've just given one yourself, where we become investors in those startups, we become coaches, we become mentors, we help seed these funds, we work on co-ventures with them, everything that has a co-element to it. And at the same time, the expectation is that they recognize that we're wanting to work together, and they respect the wisdom that comes from experience, that comes from understanding what inflation is and why it's such a terrible thing. I hear endless number of Xennials telling me, well, inflation is it doesn't very much matter. It does. I mean, and we have seen it in worst conditions. So it's that involvement at the entrepreneurial level that I think matters. In the corporations, it's slightly different, but it is still, taking them seriously, working with them to try and develop coherent future policies, because that's what they're looking for. They want to do well in the organizations, and they want to work for companies that have got clear purposes.
So I think you make a good point. I think that, frankly, millennials in particular get a bad rap. That they're not hardworking. They don't care. They just, you know, they just want to be social people, build a community, whatever. I have not found that. I truly have not. I mean, like I said, my partners are millennials, and I find them to be hardworking. They care. Now, they may not want to work 80 hours a week, but the reality is nobody wants to work 80 hours a week, right? You've got to be crazy to want to work 80 hours a week. But they will get the work done. And so, and they do care. And I think you make a good point about they do want to do well. It's not like they just want, you know, what Klaus Schwab says, you'll own nothing and be happy. I don't find that with millennials. And I certainly don't find it with the Gen Z crowd. The Gen Z crowd, they went through 2008, 9, and 10 when they were kids. And that had a big impact on them.
Absolutely.
So they do want to do well.
Absolutely. Well, you've hit it on the nail, because that generation saw what happened to their parents. Yep. They saw what happened when a trusted institution, the banking system, collapsed. And they then had this deep distrust for institutional activities, whether it was corporate or institution. And yes, I agree with you. I think it is a caring, sharing, and staring, because they're always looking at some device or another. But it's still very caring. And they want to share, because it's an asset-light generation. They're looking at Airbnb. They're looking at paying insurance for cars only when they use them. They're looking for ways in which they don't have to become capital-heavy. A proprietary ownership, which I think we have to be very careful of. Many are saying, well, why should I own my house? You know, isn't it better just to be light and to rent it? And I would want to take that argument very seriously with them. So no. You want to be building up, you know, for yourself. So we need to encourage the proprietary juices that our generation had, maybe a little skewed in their mind, but nonetheless, the aspirational drive to help them see that if we've got a co-destiny, we're going to work together so that we can have this cooperation of the generations.
Well, I think that's an important point. And really explaining the benefits of capitalism. I mean, you think about it, I don't think anybody who had the choice between living in housing that was built by entrepreneurs and housing built by the government, which would choose housing built by the government because it's not as good. Governments never do anything as well, or typically don't do anything as well as the market will do. So how do we explain that? How do we get that across?
Well, I tell you that you make a very interesting point on that, on the way in which that the housing stock works. The generation that's coming up, which is now sort of being funded by the bank of mum and dad, has a very clear view what those houses will look like. They want them to be well insulated. They want them to be energy efficient. They want them to have concern for the environment. There's a very different set of priorities into what the house is going to look like. So we have to take into account that there is that changing concern for the planet. And we can't be dismissive of just saying, oh, well, that's just sort of ESG gone mad. It is embedded in the way in which they think. So what we have to be able to do is to say, sure, you know, that is a good way of doing that. And that's why you want to be living in your own house. But the Bank of Mum and Dad is going to help begin to fund that, but sooner or later. You know, people say, but should I buy the children a house? And the answer is no, you shouldn't. What you should do is give them a sizable piece of capital with some mortgage to pay so that they know it's got to be earned. And you know, one of the findings of the book that I've repeatedly is that it's both the boomers and the zoomers who need to learn from, you know, how we discover the very different ways of thinking of things. For example, because it's current at the moment, cryptocurrency, which is a protest movement in a sense. It's a political protest movement of a generation. We don't trust the currencies that we've grown up with. Now, a group of people will dismiss it. It's here to stay. And the question is, we just have to get the understanding, look, this is not a currency. It is too volatile. But the early days of the internet were just like that. Nobody really knew what was going to come out of it. So I think we need to be helping each other right now, dads and mums and younger zennials, engaged in a conversation of how money is deployed. I'll give you one example. My daughter, who we gave a little bit of money to, and I said to her, well, just talk to the advisors and they'll tell you what you shouldn't advise, because she didn't want to be in, they'd go into gambling or to smoking or to drinking. And she said, Dad, actually, I want to use the money to do good. I don't only want it to be not in certain things. I want it to have a positive effect. And I thought, well done you. I mean, that's how we help and encourage a very different mindset to be inclusive in the market economy.
I think that is awesome. Ken Casa has been terrific. The book is The $1 trillion Wealth Transfer, how the handover from boomers to Gen Z will revolutionize capitalism. Ken, outside of buying your book, which I presume is online and everywhere we get books, where
it is.
Can we find more about what you are doing in this area?
You can. We've had very good press coverage because it's such a hot topic. So hit the website at kencosta.com.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And remember, I mean, this is the type of thing that we've got to understand. We've got to get financial education. We've got to get our kids financial education. We need to be sharing and partnering with the other generations. And we're talking about all generations. Like Ken said, it's not just the boomers that need to do something. It's also the Gen Z and millennials. They've got to reach up to the older generation. The older generation needs to reach to the younger generations. And when we do that, what we end up with always is way more money and way less tax. Thanks, everyone.
Absolutely. And thank you very much.
You've been listening to The Wealth Ability Show with Tom Wheelwright. Way more money, way less taxes. To learn more, go to wealthability.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.